Welcome back to Be More Super, the podcast, where we explore the world of entertainment with celebrity interviews from your favorite movies and TV shows. So grab your popcorn and let's get to know these stars better and what really makes them super. We are brought to you by PropStore.com, where you can find your very own piece of entertainment memorabilia from screen-used props to costumes. Now, here's your host, Brian Garner.
So let's talk about your awesome career, because I want to find out how you got into the industry and what really sparked you to be inspired to actually take this journey, because it's not an easy job. It's not a 9-to-5 job. So what was it that propelled you into the industry of dance and performance?
You know, it's not an easy job. And I would definitely tell anyone who wants to do it, like, if there's anything else in the whole world you want to do, try it first. But at the same time, I love my job and I love all sides of it. I love the parts that are hard. You know, the thing that got me into it is because of that. I was a child who just loved to tell stories. I love to entertain. I love to be a part of creating something and getting to look at that later and going, we did that. And all of those are really just pieces of the entertainment industry. Growing up in Boulder, Colorado, which is a very small town that has rich art appreciation, but not a lot of avenues to become an artist. I knew that there was a bigger world out there that I wanted to be a part of. And I just knew that art and telling stories was going to be how I got out there. And for me, dance was very available. Colorado has a great dance structure where you can really learn to be a world-class dancer in a lot of different areas. And so that's what I did first. But I sort of always knew, I really did, I sort of always knew that that would take me to these other careers. And I don't think I could put, you know, a direct line on it and say I'd become an actress, which would take me to become a director, which would take me to become a producer. But I knew that if I could become someone who people thought, oh, she tells a good story, then I could do what I wanted for my life. You know, I could just tell stories. And I think now, looking back, it was all training to become a producer. Because a producer is that person who has a story and brings in all these other voices to make sure that the story has all the right colors and then sort of, you know, it helps usher it through the process and present it to people. And that's really what I'm passionate about. But I became a dancer first, and I danced music videos. I danced on tour. I did anything I could just to get out and experience life. And through that, I ended up dancing in TV shows and, you know, talking. I was always that person who, instead of going back to my dressing room, was standing on set in the corner going, what are you doing? Why'd you do it that way? Like, hey, do you mind if I stand there and watch you? And some people mind and don't want you there. And then some people are like, no, come on over. Let me tell you why I chose to use that light in this instance. Let me tell you why I chose to use, you know, this lens. And so through 2 decades of being on incredible sets, you know, I worked with NSYNC when they were making $3 million music videos, right?
I love NSYNC. Love NSYNC.
Me too, actually. But, you know, they were spending that kind of money on a 3 minutes of film. So you're getting the best lighting technicians, the best cinematographers, you know, the most incredible set designers, because they have all of this time and money to create something incredible. And I got to sit there and watch all of that. So when it was finally my turn to produce, I feel like all of those lessons from being a dancer, being on tour with Earth, Wind & Fire, being an actress on The Game and watching how really incredible people, you know, work, it all kind of really informed who I am as a producer.
That must have been an amazing experience. And I suppose starting as a dancer is quite a good starting block for you, because we talk about the industry being quite competitive. But the dance world can be quite, you know, I've got quite a few friends that are dancers, and they tell me lots of stories on how catty some productions can be and some dancers can be, and you've got to quite have a thick skin and how challenging it can be. So I'm sure the road to success hasn't been easy for you, you know, because we all watch you on TV or in film and we think how glamorous that life is. But how's your journey been to where you are now, and what challenges and obstacles have you faced that may surprise us?
You know, I don't know if it will surprise people, but maybe. But being a woman of color in any industry is kind of difficult. Well, I shouldn't say in any. In many industries is a difficult thing. In dance and in the entertainment industry is one of those, right? Because there's already so few roles for us. There's few roles for women, and then there's even fewer when you add a woman of color. And usually that's just in front of the screen. They're not really interested in hearing what I have to say intellectually behind the scene or my experience. It's just not really thought of, you know? So I've had to fight to be seen is really like story of my career, you know? Fight to say, no, there are Black women who look like me. I'm a mixed woman, that's true, but this is a Black story as well. You know, there are Black women who talk like me because I'm me, I exist. You know, to just be seen as someone who deserves to have her story told was the first sort of hurdle. And then it was to be seen as someone who actually knows what they're talking about. You know, it's not just a doll to be, you know, stand over there and say your lines. And then finally, when you do have a little bit of, I guess it's power, you know, I'm in charge of a production, you then have to fight to make sure that you're living truthfully. I don't want to be a producer the way a man would do it or the way that I've seen it, because that's sort of the reason I'm doing it, because I think there's another way. I think there's a way that I could do it differently. And I think a lot of people fall into, we finally get our chance, and so now we have to do it the way other people did it, which doesn't make a lot of sense, right? So my fight now is to be seen as a strong producer who's doing it a different way, not a wrong way, but a different way. But I do think it's been quite a struggle just, you know, having a different story and wanting a different story to be told, which is kind of the idea of my production company, really.
That's awesome. I mean, how do you keep motivated? Because, you know, you've got your ups and downs, and we talk about how difficult it is and the challenges you're facing. So how do you keep motivated and keep driving forwards?
I just don't know any other way. It's not that you don't get down. It's not that you don't second guess sometimes. But my nature is to believe in myself, is to believe in an end product, is to believe in the journey. And to be grateful for it too, to remember that, you know, I didn't dream of the moment that you accept the award on stage. I dreamt of making the movie. And making the movie is a lot of things. It's the disappointment when you don't get the actor you want. It's the email that says you don't get the location. You know, it's all of that in one, because at the end, oh my gosh, it's a more beautiful project, a more beautiful product, because you've had all these journeys to go along. So that's how I stay motivated, is I just keep thinking this is part of it. I'll be grateful that I went through this eventually. And then a big one is my daughter now. You know, she really got me out of a little bit of a funk of, you know, what am I doing? Where am I going? Is it going to be worth it? And then I look at her and I say, of course. I want her to see her mom striving for things, being bold, being brave, hopefully achieving some big things. But more than anything, I want her to see me trying.
I mean, I've got to say, having kids, you know, the moment they arrive, your priorities and your meaning in life completely changes instantly. I mean, when I held my firstborn, you know, everything just changed. But it's what you do now. It's building that legacy, that sort of story for, you know, to last for many, many years. I mean, obviously, you seem very well motivated and driven. But when you were starting out, did you have a plan in place on what you wanted to achieve within the industry? And has that plan changed over the years?
Gosh, you know, that's a great question. A lot of people have asked me about, you know, things when I first moved here. And I don't know if anyone's ever asked me if I had like a master plan in my mind. I don't think that I did. I had a master mood board, maybe, mm-hmm. in my mind, of like where I felt like it could go. But I think I didn't know enough to know what I wanted eventually. Like I said, I didn't even realize that inside of me was really more of a producer than anything. I knew I wanted to tell stories, but I didn't really know what job was which. Mm. And so when I first moved here, my goal to feel successful was that I just wanted to pay my bills doing jobs that felt like I was creating and entertaining, whether that was dancing and hosting things or whether that was acting. Then it kind of changed to, no, I want to make my living only doing acting or jobs that I really care about. And that was really the only goal when I moved here. And then it definitely changed to, I think my main goal now is I want to spend my days being creative or being with my family and nothing in between. No angst and no drama or any of that, to find a team that I love to be creative with and then come home to my family, my husband, and my village, and just be happy. And that doesn't really include whether I win awards or whether my movie is top this or that. It's just really the package of being creative with creative people and then spending my time with those I love.
Excellent. I mean, when we talk about roles, what does a role have to get your attention? I mean, what sort of things does it have to get your creative juices going?
It has to scare me a little. I have to read it and think, ooh, I'd have to learn how to do this, or I'd have to do a little research, and that you can't take it away from me after that. You know, like if you show me something where I think, oh, I'll have to spend 2 months learning something. Oh no, because now I'm going to go do it. I'm going to go learn the thing. And that's why I'm such, I call it an acting geek. I love learning new things. And when you're an actor, you get to learn all these new things for this new character. You got to really put yourself in there. And so if you're going to offer me a role that's new and different and I have to learn something, I'm in.
Mm. I mean, have you got a method? So you book the role, you get the role. I mean, have you got a method on you know, getting that character to life, you know, researching? Have you got a thing that you do each time that you know, to bring that character to life?
Yeah, I probably have a handful of things that I do, but it does depend on the character and the project. You know, sometimes you have to go deeper. Sometimes you have to learn something. Like actually, you know, your character is a martial artist, and that would inform how you do everything, how you walk around the world, whether you know, when I'm walking in a dark alley, I feel a certain way. If my character is a black belt and she's walking in a dark alley, she just feels different. Mm. So it informs everything when you sort of find out there's little special things about your character. And then next, I think the one thing that I always do is I do some sort of a journal, writing in my character's voice, just so I make sure that I'm really familiar with it internally. And sometimes that's really deep. Like I've had to go in and like really write a whole journal because I'm just not finding this character's voice naturally. And I keep having to essentially try. It's like a test writing out. And then other times it's so easy. I'll write one journal entry and I'll do some scribbling and I'm just like, I'm there. And after that, it's more like doodling as the character. Sometimes for me, wardrobe is a really important one because as I said, when you put on clothes, it changes how you even feel about yourself. I often, even before I go into wardrobe with the actual, you know, person who's hired, I'll kind of just do my own wardrobing and like walk around in that and just sort of, again, feel what it is to feel like that character. Because a lot of it for me is, I feel that you can see my honesty on screen when I can feel it. And that's not necessarily true, but that's where I come from. If I'm feeling the essence of my character, I feel like you'll be able to see that.
I mean, is there any certain roles that you would never want to do? Because I know there's an actor called Neil that he never wants roles where he's got to kiss another woman because he's got a wife and he believes that he should only, you know, should kiss his actual wife, and which I think is quite sweet, to be fair, but it must be quite restricting. So is there certain roles or characters that you would never want to do?
That's very restricting. It makes me sad for him because it's like he's like really living everything he's doing, which is scary as these characters go through a lot. When I was younger, I was so into the art and the craft of it that I would have told you, no, I want to play everything. I want to go deep and dark. And well, then I played a character that was raped. And we did that rape scene for 7 hours that day.
Wow.
And I'm very, you know, I didn't want anyone to talk to me between, because I really thought, you know, the deeper I go, the more the audience will understand what this woman has been through. And so I put myself, Shanti, through agony so that you as an audience could feel that. And then at the end of the day, they didn't even use the scene and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It just, it really made me, oh, and also when I went back to my trailer, my body was like physically shaking and I was not physically okay after having done that. Mm. And I just realized that this isn't a game, you know, this isn't just for fun. Like sometimes what you think, you really are putting your body through certain traumas. And I am more careful. I'm more careful about what I would take, but I'm also more careful about how I approach it. Everything doesn't have to be me going through it. You know, there are techniques to be honest and real and emotional and very effective without me being shaking in my trailer afterward. So that being said, I would probably not take a character that was really, really dark. Because I would be a little bit afraid of bringing that home to my daughter at this time in my life. You know, if she's older and I feel like I have more space between us and I can decompress after a little bit more, maybe. But right now, I don't want to bring anything that dark and heavy into my home. And it is limiting. I never thought that I would say that, actually. Mm. I thought, you know, if you're an actor, you should just want to act. But I also want to...
I mean, I'm so glad that you've gone over that, because audiences, they see you, you know, perform on screen, but they don't realize the amount of work that goes into it. And you know, you can understand now why there's certain actors out there that are the method actors that literally live their roles. And this is why they have issues, you know, mental health issues, because they go down that rabbit hole and they become that character, and it's very hard to come back. And as you say, go back to your family and decompress and separate yourself. But you know, I suppose it's the craft and it's that sort of, you know, it's the, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's the sort of gamble that you have, because it's the job itself. But it's really nice you saying that, so the audience can understand, actually, it's not just one take, it's 7 hours.
Yeah. And that must have been really giving yourself. You know, these actors who win awards, you know, we celebrate them. They've given themselves to something, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not just that take of 7 hours. You know, I was working on that movie for 7 months and I wanted to be great for the audience. You know, I wanted to tell this woman's story the right way. And so for 7 months, I looked at everyone like they were looking at me in the 1850s. And, you know, you have this feeling like this man just said hi to me. And I interpreted it so differently because I'm still sort of in this character who is terrified of her surroundings. And it's just heavy. And so actors do deserve, if you are moved by something, you know, you should let them know, because they do put themselves out there for that. But it's also not, I get a lot out of it. You know, I had a really hard childhood. And my therapy, I had the best therapist in the world, which was myself, working through my emotions as an actor and talking to myself and really being aware of myself. And you have to do that in order to play another character. And so I'm grateful for some of the characters I've played and the things that they've been through, because they've helped me as Shanti, as a person, to sort of be more aware, if anything.
I mean, you've starred in so many films and so many TV shows. Is there one in particular that's really challenged you, you know, character-wise, that you've walked away from and thought, wow, that was a hard one?
That was a beast, yes, yes. Yolanda Rodriguez in Bronx SIU, she was one that I had already learned my lesson of, you can't go too deep, like you do have to find a separation of yourself. But she was had a lot of demons that I felt like I wanted to portray fairly. I didn't want her to be a cliche of a drug addict, an alcoholic, a sex addict, all these things that people sort of put you in a box for. So I wanted to be really real and fair to her. And that just makes it harder when you care, you know. But I didn't want to go too deep, as I said. And so I was really honored. This project, Bronx SIU, was nominated for Emmys. And it meant so much to us because we were all working that hard to bring this beautiful story to you.
And you were Emmy nominated as well, which must have been an amazing experience. And I tell you what, I've got a picture here of your dress that you wore on stage. And literally, I'm keeping this picture away from my 6 and 10 year old because they will want that dress. They're at the moment through that phase where they want the biggest dresses possible. And obviously, daddy's got to get those dresses. I can't say no. But how amazing was that experience? Because we all, you know, actors dream about being on stage, being at the Emmys, the Oscars and BAFTAs here in the UK. So what was that experience like? And how much pressure did you feel to look that way? Because that dress is absolutely stunning.
Oh my gosh, that is just truly, thank you. I felt no pressure to look that way. I just wanted to, you know, it was just a dream. It was just getting dolled up for fun. I had no expectation. We didn't even know we were going to be nominated, you know, so it all just felt like a cherry on top, all of it. And this dress came out of nowhere. There were like 4 dresses that I felt like a princess in. And then the stylist said, oh, wait, this is the one, you know, and he pulls it out and I just, it was a dream. And to be there, honestly, I'll get too emotional if I let myself, but it wasn't about any of that. It was that they let me in the room, you know, that they opened the door and they let me in. I've been in Hollywood for 20 years and I know so many people and I've always felt like I belong, but also not the same way that I've felt my whole life. Like they like you, they think you're cool, you can sit at the table. But this time it was like, no, Shanti, they wrote a placard for you. You've got your own seat at the table. They think you deserve to be here. So that whole night, I was just literally eyes open, like looking around like, okay, I'm going to start believing now. I deserve to be here. This is not a fluke. I'm meant to do this. It was just the most incredible night, truly. The most incredible thing.
Is it as glamorous as we see on TV? Only because I had Showray on the show a while back and she was Oscar nominated and she said awards ceremonies look glamorous, but there's a lot of waiting about. There's a lot of standing there. I mean, what's the pros and cons of going to the Emmys? I mean, do you get a bag full of goodies? What are the secrets that we may not know?
So a lot of pros. You get a lot of bags full of goodies, actually. They send you, because, you know, you have a name that people know. And so if you're wearing a jacket or if you're carrying a smoothie, people want to know what it is. So people want to give you free stuff like crazy for about a month before the Emmys. And you go to these things called gifting suites. And, you know, you take a picture and you get a bracelet. You take a picture and you get a bag of cookies, you know.
Wow.
It's hit or miss on it whether you even want this stuff. But you do feel very pampered. And usually you get to bring someone with you. And so it's kind of just a fun celebration of your hard work, really. And then you get all dolled up and you spend like truly like all day trying to look like you saw. And then you arrive and it's like, it's trying to get into a Beyonce concert, right? But everybody's Beyonce. Like everybody's dressed amazing and everyone has a seat and everyone has a ticket, but you still got to stand in these lines and, you know, be shuffled around. And then you finally get in your seat and there's like some big, wonderful opening and you're feeling very glamorous. And then everything stops and everyone gets up and walks around because there's a commercial break or there's something. And all of a sudden you realize that it's not a very, you know, glamorous event at all. It's just a bunch of people hanging out. And as soon as they do that, like, ding, the cameras are on. Everyone's like, you know,
excellent.
So it's pretty fun. You feel like you're in on the joke, you know, like you really do. You see that interview that you've always seen on TV and it's happening right in front of you. And it's just, you know, standing there in the hall, they're just talking. So it's a mix of glamorous and not.
I mean, I feel it's a bit cruel that when you watch these interviews, it's all about how people look and what they're wearing. But the men always get the easy ride. Do you know what I mean? They could turn up in a potato sack and it's fine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the women have got to look a certain way. So I think that they need to focus on the men a bit more and comment on suits and shoes and what they're wearing. But yeah, I mean, do you get starstruck? Because obviously you're in the profession and being at the Emmys, was there anyone that you met that you thought, oh, wow?
I don't really get starstruck so much just seeing someone. I get starstruck when someone is, you know, really wonderful and is who you think they are, or even more than you think they are. I met Charlize Theron, and she just blew me away because she is every bit as beautiful as you think she is on screen, but she's just very real. She's very kind and very down to earth and, you know, vulnerable, you know, and that one really, I felt starstruck. I felt like I couldn't talk because she was so normal and nice to me. And then you meet someone who's fabulous, but they act like a certain way and it's just not the same. She was probably the only person that really blew me away.
But this is what they say, is that we see in interviews these really nice, this is a really good segue, because you see really nice personas. But then you get the really horrible ones. So it's quite refreshing when you meet the people that you actually look up to, and they are really, really nice. Because I've met quite a few actors that I've looked up to for many, many years, and when I've met them, it's really destroyed everything because of the way that they've been. But then I've met some that have been fantastic. But let's talk about a project that you've got coming up, which after reading about it, I think it's fascinating. It looks really good, by the way. I literally, as soon as there's like a screener or something like that, or an advanced copy, I want to watch it because it sounds amazing. I'll bring a poster up for it there. I think that's the right one. Is that the wrong one or the right one?
Oh, that's perfect.
I mean, that poster says yeah, it all. That for me, I want to watch it. If you could tell us a bit about it, because this has been a bit of a time in creation, really, because I've read here that I think it was acquired the script 7 years ago. So if you could talk about how this has been brought to life, really.
This is the culmination of everything we're talking about, these dreams that I had. When I had my daughter, I knew that I wanted to pivot. You know, when you're pregnant and you're trying to figure out your place in Hollywood, I made two movies while I was pregnant. And I just realized, like, I just didn't know if that was what I wanted to do exactly the same way. And so I needed to think about, like, what's next, as we said. And for me, I always knew I wanted to pivot into producing projects for many reasons. I wanted to control the environment on set, the culture. I wanted to cast, you know, people that look like me in roles that you wouldn't normally. I wanted to make sure that behind the scenes, people who look like me are also given opportunities to do parts or to work on set. So I was like, maybe it's time to do that pivot. And I had sort of thought I would do a small movie, a little bigger movie, and then jump to my dream, which was Persona. And something just shifted. And I said, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to go all in on the project that I really believe in, not make the little one that may or may not be okay to hopefully make the big, you know, let's just go all in. And yes, I had met the producer, I'm sorry, I met the writer about 8 years before, and we did a little short film together. And afterward, he said, I'm working on a movie that I really want you to star in. And when he gave me the first 20 pages of the script, I realized, like, I've been sitting there and I hadn't moved. I was just staring at it. And it's because it was so captivating and different and well thought out, and it was an interesting female character that I hadn't seen before. So we spent 7 years really, really making sure that these characters, there are two female characters in it that are really, I think, beautifully layered. And I wanted to make sure they were real and they had a nice relationship that felt right. And once we got there, it was like, we got to do this and we got to do it the right way. So I had planned on directing, except I really just felt like it was going to be too much and it wasn't fair to the project. But my I had such a clear vision, and I just didn't know if anyone else was going to share that vision. And ultimately, I always said I wanted a music video director, because as I told you, I started in music videos, and I actually really appreciate the art more than maybe other theatrical people do, because they know how to make something look stunning. They know how to make that movement work with the camera. They know how to light things in a certain way. And I remember I saw a music video. It was Eminem and Rihanna, maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And it was really a gritty, dirty music video, but somehow it was beautiful. Like, you're looking at the actual, you know, composition of the screen, and it's stunning, and you're leaning in, even though it's like mice and spiders and it's gross. You're like, oh, that's pretty somehow. And I just knew that that was important for persona, because the idea of persona is that a woman wakes up filthy, injured, in a lot of pain, clearly has a severe gash on her head. Her ankle is very messed up, probably broken. And she doesn't know anything else. And she starts looking around, and she's in the most horrifying situation a woman can find herself in. She's in this house. Bad things happen here, and she's locked in. And that's all she knows. And so that can be very off-putting for an audience as well. Like, they want out of the house. Like, I don't want to watch this movie. Get me out of here. So I knew I needed to have that beautiful element on screen. And I found Mike Ho, who is one of the most prolific music video directors, but in his heart, all he wants to do is tell these beautiful, passionate, vulnerable stories. And we just connected immediately. And his voice on this is incredible. And that's also what I'm passionate about, is finding the right person to add that element that you don't have. You know, a conversation is only amazing if you have lots of different information and colors. And this is such a colorful conversation, because we have so many interesting voices. One thing I will say that I'm only going to tell you guys, there is a wonderful appearance from a very wonderful British actor in this movie that I can't say anything else about.
Oh no.
He's amazing. He's amazing. That's all I can say.
Oh no. And yeah. Obviously this project, you've literally, you know, is such a passion project for you, because apparently you moved your family, your husband, and I think I read here your mom as well, you know, to set, so you can have the family close, and obviously breastfeeding and everything like that, which I just think is a magical thing. You have got such a supportive family. Which must add to it, you know. But when is it going to be coming out? When can we maybe see? Because I think it's doing the festival circuits first.
Yes, it is. I actually am on my way to doing final sound edits this afternoon, which has been one of the most fun things to do on this project, because as a producer who's directing everything through post-production, you get to see all these elements that you just normally don't get to see, the way that the finishing product comes together. We're going to do the festival circuit throughout the entire year 24. I would say probably audiences will be able to see this movie in the spring. I could not be more proud of this, truly. And I wish that I could just send everybody copies of it now, because it's that good. I know that people will love it, but I'm also really hopeful that they see some of the other beautiful things about it, like the fact that it passes the Bechdel test, like with flying colors. We've got two wonderful female characters that talk to each other, that talk about interesting things that are not just about men. But it also, all that aside, is an excellent thriller that will keep you guessing, that will have you glued to your chair. It's just an honor to be able to say all that, to be able to say that women and people of color helped make an excellent movie. It's an honor. And I do think that we'll be having a premiere in London. So maybe we could
get together. Definitely, yeah. Definitely. If you come over to London, I'll be there. But yeah, as soon as like an advanced screening is available, because, you know, I appreciate passion projects from the way that they're shot, you know, the stories. And I find that actually, I mean, would you class it as an indie movie? Is that what you would class it as?
Yeah, I will. And that's actually an interesting thing. When you see it, I don't think it will appear as an indie. That's what's kind of, it's been an interesting journey because we made a movie that's just so great that we kind of don't know what to do with it, which is sort of a great problem to have. But it just deserves more of a platform than just sending it straight to streaming. So that's why we chose to do the festival circuit. But yeah, it's an indie movie. It's a great indie thriller. It's a great indie relationship drama. It's great.
And do you know what? Indie movies, I always say, are a lot better than these big blockbusters because, you know, these big blockbusters, they've got the studios behind them and all they're thinking about is money and what stereotypically could make them money. So indie movies, you know, they push the boundaries. They make great content. They make great stories. You can see the heart and soul on screen, which I look forward to watching it. I really, really do. I mean, I've got to ask as well, obviously, diversity and inclusion. You mentioned there about this film is something the industry is struggling with, especially with representation as well in the awards, you know, in the awards itself, like the Oscars. I mean, what do you think needs to change in Hollywood? If you had that magic wand that you could wave it and change one thing, what would it be?
Yeah. You know, it's unfortunately not one thing. It's sort of like systemic racism, right? It's not one thing. It's sort of just the system the way that it is, right? Like, for instance, I'm doing the one thing that you can do, which is make movies that I want to see with people hiring the people that I want and having those different colors come out. And I think that our movie is going to do a lot to move that forward because they'll look at that and say, oh, wow, that's different. That's interesting. How did you get that product? And the answer is different voices. This person has never been allowed to do it before. That's why you've not seen it before. And so if our movie does well, that's, you know, 10 more people of color that are going to get jobs in the industry moving forward. So that's how you kind of combat it. But it is an interesting thing that Hollywood is not really tackling. You know, they're hiring one or two more black actors or actresses. They're hiring a black director, a female director. But those are not going to really change. That's not going to change the culture. You've got to do something like what I did where the, you know, half of the movie is, you know, people of color, women who are not normally getting those opportunities. And an example that I think will change things, our DP is African, dark-skinned black man. And I think that he is going to win so many awards for this movie. And that's just going to be another person that is going to be on the Marvel set next time that has a different perspective. He was raised in Africa. He has these different thoughts, this different way of moving the camera. And he's going to get that job through doing this job, you know, and my special effects makeup artist is a woman of color who's only been allowed to do glam. And now she's doing cuts and gashes and gunshot wounds. And it's awesome. And hopefully she's on the next, you know, whatever big movie as well. So that's how you combat it is you just give people opportunities when you can. You go and you see these movies, you know, if you're a person of color or if you're a person who supports people of color and women and minorities, go and see our movies, you know, tell other people about it so that we can then, if they're good, which it is, and then you tell other people and, you know, we all get more jobs.
Isn't it silly though? We're in 2024 now and you talk about racism and it's just, it's really sad that it's still happening. I still think it breaks my heart. So this is why when I mention kids all the time, I think that partly racism is generational. You know, it's how people have been brought up to think a certain way and be a certain way. So hopefully from my, you know, view is that generations can start to change that perspective and that narrative because It is shocking because my first experience of racism was when I was at primary school. I think I was about five, six. And I had a friend and he was mixed race. And he was getting bullied. I was getting bullied because I was quite a large, child. I was quite round. And it was quite weird because we was drawn together, to support each other because he was getting bullied for being mixed race. And he was the only mixed race, kid in our area. And it was like odd for everyone to see. And then obviously I was getting bullied and we became best friends. And it was really weird to witness that. And I just think it's really odd that it's still happening. And it's sad, isn't it? I mean, it shouldn't be. I mean, Black Lives Matter is an important movement. And what annoys the hell out of me is when people say all lives matter. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which is a ridiculous statement because, of course, all lives matters. But, it's not about that. It's about Black Lives Matters and you're taking away from what that is about. But it's quite sad though, it's still happening in my
It's sad, and I think I've dealt with this my whole life. I was bullied on the playground, I was beat up, I had no friends, I had a really hard childhood because of race specifically and socioeconomical issues as well, being poor. And the thing is that I used to think, we're going to make a better world. There'll be a time when it's not like this. And not to be pessimistic at all, I'm actually a really optimistic person, but I just don't think that there's really a world in which this stuff doesn't exist. Because when people are down on themselves, the only thing they can do is find a way to be down on someone else sometimes, right? And the way you do that is you find your differences and you pick on them. And so I've tried to stop saying, like, isn't it crazy that these things exist? Isn't it, like, it's 2024, like, how can this be? And I've just started to say instead, whatever it is, maybe, when my daughter's my age, it's not racism, it's hair. If you have curly hair, you're weird. Maybe it's, noses or lips or what, but it's going to be something that someone's better than someone else if they have it. And I think it's just really important to remember that we should fight for what we believe in and we should go after what we want no matter what anyone else says. And other than that, there's just nothing you can do, So I fight for my, like shops. I always go to women-owned shops or minority-owned shops. I try and do that because that's something that I can do. I can't control whether somebody else is racist.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I mean, but hopefully, fingers crossed, in the future, things take a better turn and it is generational. And parents out there, we've got a level of responsibility to inspire our youth to maybe think a certain way. But I wanted to just mention your Instagram so people can actually follow you. So I've got it on the screen just there. Obviously, over 200,000 subscribers. I mean, how much pressure do you feel having that amount of followers on what you put out there in the ether for everyone to see? I mean, do you think maybe I should be more nervous,
but I'm not. I usually just post, I'm very much this place where I feel like I'm a good person. I continue to try and be a good person. But other than that, I just am who I am. And so I put out, just what makes me happy. I try not to be super political unless it's really important to me. I try and just be a place for people to come and feel like a safe landing to hear positive things and to see, nice things. My daughter's too, so there's a lot of cute little, us cooking and things like that. I like to go hiking. I like to show what I call my village. My life too, because the biggest thing is when I was young, I knew I wanted to live a different life, but I didn't really know what it was. I didn't know what it looked like. So I try and bring my village along with me and say, if you think my life is so great, this is what it looks like. This is what I do. I spent 7 hours doing this in the editing room. I try and show people what it is to be an actor producer. So please come join the conversation.
And we'll find out when Persona comes out and also we'll find out a bit more about that coconut water because it's my favorite, that Vita. Honestly,
it's
my girls.
Favorite too?
Yeah, yeah. My girls are obsessed with coconut water. With that water, with Vita. Oh, yeah. It's so good for you. It's lovely as well. You know,
it's just really good for you, great kids. Instead of juice, it's so good.
Excellent.
Yes.
And then one of my last questions before we bid farewell is, if you could go back in time to yourself when you were starting out, what advice would you give yourself knowing what you know now?
Wow. So many things flashed through my head right there. That's rough. most of the time I would just be like, you know, just be strong, be positive, because I'm really happy with where I am. So doesn't seem like you need to change anything. But then you said that and I thought, oh gosh, that girl who moved here could use so much advice. You know, like, go get your hair done, honey. It's okay. Like, learn how to do your makeup sooner. No, in all honesty, there were a lot of bumps along the way. But as I said, they made me who I am. And if you take one away, then maybe I don't get here. So I think the only thing I would tell her is enjoy it. You know, it's enjoy every step. Even the no's are part of something, and also keep going.
Excellent. I mean, they say that we learn from struggle. That's how we learn to be, you know, who we are now. But Shanti, thank you so much for coming onto the show for a chat. I cannot wait for Persona to come out. I'm so, so excited to watch it. And obviously, everyone watching and listening, please follow Shanti on Instagram, because that's probably the best way to find out when it comes out. And we might get some sneak peeks, you know, behind the scenes in the future. But thank you so much. Keep safe and stay super.
Thank you so much. Lovely to talk with you.
Thank you for listening to Be More Super, the podcast. This podcast has been brought to you by PropStore.com. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a rating and review. To stay up to date with Be More Super and get all the behind-the-scenes content, you can follow us on Instagram at Be More Super, the podcast, and on Twitter at Be More Super. Keep safe and stay super.